Bonjour la classe, ça va? Here today with AB Zonda live from lockdown in Toulouse. How you doing, mate? You're right?
Yeah, good in yourself.
I'm good, I'm good. You are definitely wearing the best stash we ever had on the pod. So
Have
well
to
done.
wear the kit, otherwise I'll probably get in trouble. So
Nice, nice.
you know the rules over here. It's pretty strict.
Nice, nice. Now, mate, look, I'm really excited to have you on. Obviously, we've connected over a few years. Lucky enough to go and spend a bit of time with you last year in South Africa with was it just me and Juan? Yeah, just me and Juan.
Yes.
No Fletch. And then yeah, obviously it's exciting times for you now. You're coaching over in Toulouse, top 14 Europe, all that type of stuff going on. Do you want to kind of introduce yourself, tell people how you've ended up in a room in lockdown in Toulouse?
It's a very long story, but I'll keep it very short. I started coaching at a very young age, due to a neck injury. And actually, I listened to your latest podcast with what is the coach's name? He's Ealing Trailfinders now.
Andy Holloway started at the age 23, something.
And he there's a very similar story. I heard he also had a neck injury. So yeah, it was an easy way out for me. I was never going to be good enough to play professional anyway. So but yeah, I started coaching really young. I had a bad neck injury in my last year of school. And then since then, I kind of just dived into coaching more just for the fun of it, because I wanted to stay involved. I wanted to stay involved with the game even at school. So I started coaching the juniors as they came in. Then from there, I studied at Stellenbosch, and myself and my dad, we started a rugby academy down in Cape Town. Between my studies and setting up this academy with him, I kind of transitioned from a student that just enjoyed to coach to a fully fledged coach coaching for a living. And then I spent a good chunk of time there, probably 5 6 years, with my dad, and that was probably the best learning school I could have asked for. My dad mentored me every single day, and every week or every month we had different teams from all over the world coming in, and I could watch different coaches from all over the world, how they train, get to pick their brains, and kind of just develop my own philosophy in terms of how I want to approach coaching individuals, coaching team. But yeah, then there came a point where I kind of got nudged and got told, listen, it's time for you to maybe move on, find something else. And the opportunity came up.
By your dad,
Basically, and
by
my dad kind of nudged me towards, there was this one opportunity that came up and I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it. But anyway, from there I went to a very small union called the Border Bulldogs.
Yep.
Beautiful part of South Africa, East London. Ended up living there for a year. And then the story goes really quickly. From there, I went to the Sharks, worked my way up basically from the bottom through the Sharks ranks, and now I am currently at Toulouse.
Nice.
So,
What was your dad like
and
as
that's
a mentor?
what was my dad like?
As a mentor. So Richard Hill would speak very fondly of your dad, and Richard Hill is the best judge of character of any man I know. So
Yes.
that's a good call. Your dad's obviously a good man and got to hang with meet your mum and dad in South Africa as well. What was he like? What was he like being mentored by your dad?
Well, I'm still being mentored by him every day, so it hasn't yet stopped, and I don't think it ever will. But no, it was really good. It's me and my dad have a very good relationship, not just in terms of rugby, but outside of rugby as well. We both really enjoy surfing. We enjoy being out in nature and just having a laugh. So yeah, I think I'm very lucky to be able to have been, I would say, have been fast-tracked in terms of learning about the game and the intricacies around, around everything to do with coaching, really.
What was Stellenbosch like? So obviously it's a cool place, and I would have same whenever you go there, you seem to meet lots of coaches. So the Sevens guys there, or the provincial side of there, or you know, their schoolboy teams there. But what type of coaches were you observing? What type of things were you noticing at that young age? What were you learning?
So I went to school when I came back from the UK, which is another long story, but basically we came back from the UK when I was 15, I think, around there. Then I went to a school called Paul Roos, which is basically smack bang in the middle of Stellenbosch. And I kind of spent a lot of time from school through my studies in Stellenbosch. And it is in a really amazing place. It lives and breathes rugby. The late great Dr. Darnie Craven, which is, I don't know if you've ever been there, you've seen the little statue with his little dog Blixen.
Yeah.
He was my dad's mentor when my dad was a player and transitioned to coach. And he actually got my dad his first coaching job, which was up in Pretoria. So I feel like there's a bit of a story and a reason why things happened the way it did. But yeah, Stellenbosch is amazing. That center that they built was actually built at the school that I went to, but that only happened after I left. So yeah.
What type of things were you noticing when you were starting out coaching? What were you seeing that was good? What were you seeing that you thought, yeah, I'm not so keen on that?
I think when I started out, I realized that I'm not the type of coach to yell and instruct. And I think that basically comes from spending a lot of time with my dad, because he was never the type of coach to do that either. I think there is a time and place to be strict and to make players understand they need to adhere by specific rules. I'm not talking about rules on the field, but rules off the field and code of conduct and things like that. It's important when you run an academy out in the middle of nowhere, and you're responsible for 30, 40 kids' lives, you know. So there's a time and a place for everything, but that's definitely the first thing that I notice, is that I'm never going to be a coach that's going to, you know, bring down the hammer on people and shout and scream every day, because if I had to do it that way, then I probably would have stopped long ago, because it wouldn't be fun for me. So
did you notice people doing that in South Africa?
Yes, a lot of people. It's kind of the go-to, you know. It's the fallback. It's kind of like in the game, the go-to is contact, and in the coaching game, the go-to is shouting. So, I think it has changed significantly since then, but I mean, it's still prevalent in a lot of schools and a lot of clubs, and I'm sure a lot of professional teams as well.
Yeah, what and at that stage, were you coaching teams, individuals? What kind of coaching jobs did you do?
So when I was at Stellenbosch, I was involved with the school even after I left, and then I also got involved with one of the hostels there. And yeah, it was a good experience for me. That was the first time I started coaching. Coaching players that were older than me, and I think that hasn't really stopped yet. I'm nearly getting to the point where there's not that many players that are older than me, but there still are a couple. And that was a weird thing at first, and something that I needed to learn how to deal with. But again, I think if you accept that you're never going to know everything, and you don't act like you do know everything, I think players are willing to be open and willing to listen if you give them your honest point of view.
And if you were coaching a team as you were then, what would an AB Zonder coach team look like? What type of things would you hope if Juan came to watch them play, he would say about them?
Now or then?
Both.
I would like to say that I hope the now and then would be the same. The ethos would be the same. And I think the main thing that I would like if someone watches a team that I was involved in is to say that they enjoyed watching them play. I think that's to me is the most important thing, that they enjoy watching them play and they can see the players enjoy playing the game.
Yeah, that'd be good. Good. Just look at their faces.
Exactly.
exactly. What it looks like. What? So clearly now you're coaching. Well, there's a couple of things actually. I was definitely curious about. So you talked about, well, I worked my way through. So you've done a lot of coaching, lots of different environments. You've definitely worked your way up at the Sharks to being involved with first team stuff. What does that look like, working your way up? What's your advice to people who are, you know, like, you're not an ex player. You're not a, you know, you're not a rock star. No disrespect.
No. I'm definitely not a rock star. Definitely not. I can't even hold a beat. So, no, for me, I think the thing about working your way up is, as I say, when I left, right at the beginning, when I left Cape Town and when I moved on from Border to the Sharks, every time something new came up, it was like it was something that I didn't expect and that I didn't necessarily want. It's just something that came about, and I think it's because I wasn't worried. Maybe I won't say I wasn't worried, but I was focused on where I was and making the best of what I was busy with. And I think that's still today the thing that I'm doing. I think I'm lucky that I haven't yet really been in a position where I've been so unhappy that I've run away from stuff. And there's a difference between working hard and pushing through tough times compared to just being miserable and not enjoying what you're doing. I think there's a very big difference. So to people that are looking to work their way up, I would say don't look up, just look straight ahead and keep going with what you're busy with and make the best of what you're currently doing, because people will notice. If you're doing something good and people are enjoying themselves and people are developing and getting better, I think people will take notice. Maybe sometimes the right people, sometimes not the right people, but as long as you're enjoying it, you should be well on your way.
And I would definitely have been enjoying working at the Sharks. It's a pretty cool place. And actually to give you a bit of, so there's a couple of coaches coaching now in the Premiership. So Ian Costello coaching at Wasps, Alex O'Dowd coaching at Saints. Both those guys had coached players who were on loan at Nottingham. And those players came back and said, these guys are really good coaches. So they were just focused on the here and now. And if you if you do a decent job, it'll hopefully eventually some people will tell some other people about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. What was it like at the Sharks? So tell me about your experiences at the Sharks. What were the highlights of it? What were the best bits?
I think for me, living in Durban was one of the highlights of being at the Sharks. I'm a very keen surfer. I think of when I explain my surfing life, I think of a meme where you see this photo of a professional surfer like doing the most radical something, and that's me. That's what I think I do. And then there's another photo of someone looking like an absolute idiot, and that's probably exactly what I'm busy with actually. So, but no, living in Durban was awesome. I really enjoyed my time there. The weather is amazing. It's an absolute paradise, to be honest. It's tropical. It's hot. It's sometimes too hot, but it's hot the whole year round. It's definitely a playground in terms of land and sea. You can anything you can think of, you can do. So that was definitely a highlight. And then in terms of rugby, same thing. I really enjoyed my time from start to finish at the Sharks. All the people that I met along the way. There's some really, really good people that had been working there and that are still working there, that I still keep in contact with very closely. So I'm just very thankful for my time and thankful for the opportunity that I got to work there.
What are you most proud of? What's the stuff that you think they would say about you at the Sharks now you've left?
Yeah, I think the first thing that people would go to would say, yes, we won a Currie Cup, and that's like the main thing of my time there. But it was a really cool experience to win a Currie Cup, and it was even better winning it after having lost it the year before at home against Province, and then winning it away. But for me, I think the relationships that I made along the way, especially with players that were coming through the system. I think of a guy like Alan Dell. He's moved now from Scotland, I think, to the UK.
Yeah, I think has he gone to London Irish?
Or
gone to
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And like when I see players like that do so well, it just makes me, I'm so proud to see, you know, these junior players that we coached when they were, you know, still developing and still honing their craft that are now achieving such great things. That's the main thing for me, is seeing individuals push on to become world-class rugby players. And sometimes it's even players that I've coached there that haven't become world-class rugby players but then have pushed on to play in the USA in the college league, and from there they've either become coaches or they've made a really good living overseas, but their pathway was through rugby, you know. So I think those are probably the most memorable things, is the players that I worked with. And
what do you think they'd say about you? What would they say your strengths are?
My strengths, I don't know. Probably building chats, having off field chats. No, I would hope that they would say my ability to make them a better player individually. That's kind of the cornerstone of everything that I do. I try to improve the player, and then from there, improve the team. And I think that's one thing that a lot of coaches. Not a lot of coaches, but I think that's something that all coaches kind of lose sight of. The higher up you coach, the more professional it becomes, the more it becomes about the strategy on the weekend and the way you plan and periodize your year and all these complex things around a very simple game and a very simple concept of just improving players. So that's probably the only thing that I would hope they say is that I help them become a better player.
When we went out after the match, what I noticed was just your energy and your relationship with the players. And you were one of the keenest guys in the warm-up. No one was warming up more keenly than you. You were
London. I think energy is a big thing, and it's something that that people maybe don't talk about too much. Since I've been here at Toulouse, it's something that it's a big talking point among the coaches. Because I think there's a time and a place to give energy, and it comes from both sides. There's a time and a place for coaches to give energy, and there's a time and a place for players to give energy. And I think that flow of giving energy and conserving energy applies to everything you do and all parts of the game, really. So it's an interesting topic for sure.
See a lot of coaches that end up giving up way too much energy and then slowly dying. what have you learned from moving to France, apart from a bit of French? What's been different?
I think everything. Everything is different, apart from the language and the culture. I just think they talk about the Anglo-Saxon way of doing things. And before I came here, I didn't really know that we fell under that blanket in South Africa, but apparently we do. So you're either Anglo-Saxon or you're Latin influence, you know. And they're very hell bent on letting you understand that, listen, you're Anglo-Saxon. That's where you come from, and we are Latin. So I must say everything that I've experienced here so far, I've really enjoyed. I got warned about a couple of things, and maybe I've just been lucky in terms of the club that I've joined. But the experience here has been really good.
What were you warned about?
I was warned about players don't work hard, that they're not coachable, you must watch your back, France is a dangerous place, top 14 is a tough league, watch what you know, like 110 different pieces of advice, but not really advice, it's more just, you know, negativity in my mind. And I haven't found any of it really. I've been blessed to be part of a coaching team that is very, very competent. So much so that I sometimes think to myself, what am I doing here? How did I end up here? And just the life around the club, it's amazing. This city absolutely lives and breathes rugby. And it's something that I actually haven't really experienced to this extent in South Africa. I can imagine back in the day, Pretoria, when the Bulls were maybe, you know, at the top of their peak, it might have been close, but I definitely haven't experienced anything like this. So it's been a really, really good experience.
My favorite experiences of playing rugby have been in France. It is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's to do with you know, the history of it. Village, every village had their own team, you know, and it wasn't just a team that you played for. It was your region or your little town, you know. And I think that's just kind of bred this love for the game and the rivalry over the years. So
would you call yourself a skills coach? Would you say that's my role? That's my function, coaching team?
I would say here I'm an assistant coach with a big interest in skill development, and I think that's obviously one of the reasons why they've brought me over is to try and help improve the system and maybe just put a little bit more emphasis on individual development. But we work in a very interesting way at the club, which allows me to be a part of a lot of different things, which I'm also really enjoying, and which is a evolution for me as a coach as well.
Which will be different to South Africa, where you'd be much more compartmentalized around attack, coach, defense, scrum,
rush, much more Anglo-Saxonized.
Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. That takes a strong leader to give people lots of, you know, responsibility that doesn't necessarily have such strict boundaries. I like that.
Yes. I think, look, Hugo Mola, our head coach, he definitely thinks differently. My dad has quite a long-standing relationship with a man by the name of Pierville Pro. And the way that Hugo coaches and the way that he manages makes me think of Pierre a lot, and the style of the way that he coaches and the things that he believes in. I'll always be eternally thankful to him for giving me the opportunity, but also for helping me grow as a coach. I mean, I've only been here for 6 months, but I feel like I've picked up, 6 years of experience in the last 6 months. So,
what type of stuff have you been adding to your what stuff have you been adding to your repertoire?
I don't know. I think it's just a mix of everything, really. Getting involved with strategy, with planning tactically, everything from team selection to the way we train, to the periodization per week, per year, bringing in new ideas. It's all open with Hugo. You know, he's a very open coach, and he's very forward thinking. So I think I've kind of developed in all aspects, really.
Nice. And what would a week look like for you? Would it be some individual time with players on the grass with the other coaches in team sessions?
Yeah.
Video review. Tell me about some of that. What's the top three things you get excited about in your week? What's your top three moments?
So I think I should give you a bit of the context and the evolution just in the last 6 months. So I think when I arrived, I was the mute. The mute standing behind someone's shoulder training, you know, and they all knew who I was, but they were kind of like, okay, so this dude's here, he's sooner or later he's going to start doing something with us, but we're not sure what. So that was kind of the beginning for me, and slowly I've kind of evolved to doing a little bit more, saying a little bit more, and the more my language grows, I think the more I will grow in terms of the team. So initially, a lot of my input was upstairs with the coaches, and a big task that I got asked by Hugo is to influence the way of thinking and the way we prepare and the games or the drills that we wanna do. He wants me to give my opinion, and if you're in an office with 5 other French coaches, it's sometimes difficult to understand first of all what they're talking about, and secondly, give your input if you can't say anything. But slowly but surely, it's kind of evolved, and I feel like I've put my stamp on the way we do things and what we do. But yeah, in the week, things that I get excited about is working with players and individuals. And I must say, it's hard finding the time to get to everyone. And I think every skills coach out there will probably agree with me that you're probably more a time thief than an actual skills coach, because you struggle to find time to see everyone. But the main thing for me is to try and get all the players to kind of embark on this autonomous process of getting better. And I'm kind of managing that as I go along. And I don't have a Anglo-Saxon approach to it where, okay, on Monday, I'm going to check up on Jeremy and Bobby and Robbie. That's not how it is. It's kind of it's in the moment, in the feel, and you try and put some meat to it, but I think it just kind of evolves as the week goes on.
Which players are the most autonomous at the moment? Give a couple of shout outs. Which players are really in charge of their own learning?
You know the older players, again, who I got not the players that I got warned about, but in general I got told, the older players, they'll be the ones that'll be difficult. A guy like Max Meadow has been absolutely superb. He trains like a 19-year-old on the field. He's absolutely the top end of, if you had to call him a competitor, everything he does, he wants to be the best at. He wants to win. But at the same time, he'll say, for instance, we go to extras. He'll do extras, but at the same time, he'll also make extra time to help people around him as well.
Yeah, that's
and things like that to me is just amazing, for especially for a player that I think has achieved basically everything you would want to achieve in your career. To still find time, one, to help those around you, and secondly, to still be putting in the time, the hard yards before training and even on his off days. So
how did you feel? I asked Stuart Lancaster yesterday about his first ever session, but how did you, has it changed how you feel? So for me, you going, right, go and do some work with Maxime Médard. You're like, okay, all right. He's got a few, he knows a few things.
Yeah.
How's that evolution been for you?
I think I'm quite, I don't know, I suppose the right word is nonchalant when it comes to rugby players. And I think I'm lucky in that sense because I kind of grew up with it as a little kid with my dad. He was a professional coach his whole life, and I was used to, Joel Stransky walking in on a Sunday afternoon to come and say hello, maybe come for a braai, or we go and visit Gary Pagel at their farm for a weekend. It wasn't a odd thing for me to be mixing with rugby players. So for me, it's just I try and approach every single player the same. If it's a espoir 18-year-old, or if it's Max Meadow, I try and treat them the same, and try and give them the same amount of time and interest that I would either way.
How far down do you work? So do you do first team espoir? Do you get down to academy as well?
No, so we work I'd say it's 80-20. So we work full time pro, and then twice a week. In the evenings, we help out with the espoirs as well. So it's been full throttle, but it's been really good for me, and especially now in this time, to learn how to coach in French. It's been really good for me to work with the Espoirs and kind of experiment my my language. So yeah, no, it's been very good.
What would you hope that an AB Zonda individual skill session would look like? What would be the kind of, look, here's my building blocks, here's the stuff that if you came over and watched me coach, you'd see this stuff going on. What would you hope?
I would hope that you'd see that I'm trying to tend to the needs of whoever I'm working with. I think that's the main thing. I don't think there's any rocket science behind skills coaching. I think you need to understand the fundamentals, and then you need to understand how people move and what their limitations are, and how you can help them identify movement solutions in terms of what they're struggling with. I think that's the most important.
Cool. Give me an example. Give me an example of something that where you feel like you've had impact.
In terms of team or individual?
Player. Let's go individual.
Yeah. Well, I just think, well, it's a difficult question, but across the board. So someone that, you know, I might pick up after 2 or 3 weeks, that we've got a winger, and I won't mention his name, but we have a winger that, that never tries to beat someone on the outside. And I would suggest to that player, you know, maybe we should start trying to have a look at trying to beat people on the outside, you know? And then again, that's the part of me I don't want to tell him to do it. I want him to get interested in the possibility of it and then come back to me so that I can help him.
Yeah, that's
so that it's his thing and it's not my thing. Might drop a couple of clips on Huddle and not mention it and wait for them to talk to me about it, you know? And I think sometimes doing things that way, the coaches that you work with would say, but listen, you're not sitting on people, you're not getting them to get better, you know. But in the long run for me, that's the only way you're gonna get you're gonna affect true change, is by having that player want, you know, you gotta develop this need that they want to change. It's not something that you tell them to change. Identifying something like that and then working on it for maybe 2-3 months and not seeing anything, and then one game, vital game, last 2 minutes, boom, player goes around the outside, steps on the inside and scores, and then it's all worth it, you know?
Is he a good player? Is he a good player? Is it the player I'm thinking of?
No, it's not. However,
I agree with you. Same with coaches, really. I think I guess your challenge is always time. So if someone said to you, you've only got a day with this person a year, then you might do it differently. But the reality is,
exactly,
you know, especially in periods like now, you've got a bit of time. And actually, now's not a bad time for them to start to go, do you know what? I'm going to go explore some stuff that's going to, you know, stretch me a little bit. What does that look like for you guys at the moment? Because obviously, you guys are in total lockdown. You're more locked down than we are. What are the players up to?
I think the club's been really proactive in terms of the lockdown and the situation we're in. Our whole high performance centre has been absolutely dismantled and carried away. So everybody's got. Everybody's got gym equipment and everything else you can think of to try and stay fit at home. And obviously the first question I asked is, but does everyone have a ball? And which there aren't enough of. But that's the first thing I did. I put up on the group a couple of options in terms of stuff that you can buy off Amazon. Not very expensive, and stuff that you can use at home to do some home skills. Then I put up a little video with 20 or 30 little exercises that guys can kind of just stay sharp with. It's a testing time, I think. I think there will be ebbs and sways in terms of involvement from the players' side. I think they, at the beginning, they might have been excited because it's something new and, okay, I'm gymming at home and I can do some little skills at home. But then after a while, your interest kind of starts to dip and you think, well, my couch is only 5 meters away and I've got unlimited Netflix. So, I think the key for us is keeping players motivated, and the prospect of us returning and playing is still there. So we have to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. What would your perfect coaching team look like? So you've experienced some different stuff. Let's say I'm giving you five coaches, AB, right? And you're running the club, and you're going to organise five coaches. What specialities would you need? How would you merge them together? What would that look like?
Maximum of five. Okay, let me just, as I go, let me write
this
down.
I'll have a go at this as well, because that's something I've thought about that much.
You want to go first or me?
Well, I need someone to coach the scrum.
Set piece is a given.
Yeah,
set piece is a given. You can't get away from that. So that's already two. That's two down. Boom.
It's at least one down. You definitely need a set piece coach.
Yeah. Okay. So set piece coach for sure. I will definitely. You can't. It's one of the rocks. If we don't have that, we don't have a very good grand likelihood of winning.
Go on then. What's your rock? What's your next rock in our team?
I think the way I would set it up, and that'll probably include the set piece coach, I'll set it up a bit differently. I would go with an offensive and a defensive team, and inside of that you have. You might set up an offensive and a defensive team consisting of two or three coaches, or let's go two and two coaches because we've only got five. And then within that spectrum, I would have my my coaches focus on specific areas, maybe. But I think everything has to kind of overlap. That's for sure.
Same for me. I would overlap. I would be mindful of. Actually spoke with Lanny a bit about this yesterday. I wouldn't necessarily always separate people attack and defence. So Lanny said he did attack and defence because bits of the game that are important. So I would have set piece. I would have someone who has the ability to understand the kicking game well.
Yeah.
I would have someone who's really good at off ball. And I would someone who would understand transition. And then I might have a skills master. But they would all work across lots of things.
So I reckon that the off ball is probably most likelihood should be the guy that focuses on the skills.
Yeah, that's you. You're off ball coach.
No. Sorry, not off ball. Transition. Sorry.
Transition. You're doing transition.
Yeah, definitely. So that would be. But yeah, kicking game for sure. Have to have someone focusing on that. Set piece. Transitions. Could be transition / off the ball. Could also be a good mix.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question. I think it'll all come down to what's available.
Do you guys get out and go? Do the coaches get out and go and explore other worlds, other coaching environments, other sports? Are they?
We actually had a very nice training session with the Toulouse Olympique rugby league team.
Yeah.
Kind of train against each other, which we did. They showed us a couple of really interesting things that they focus on defensively. Obviously, the continuity of the game and the ruck for them was an absolute killer. We've had quite a couple of coaches come in and out, coming to see what we do, and then you kind of get an opportunity to pick people's brains. We had a guy, Felix Jones. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yep.
But he came over the other day, and it's also a really interesting guy. Some really good ideas. So it's definitely given me the opportunity, or given us the opportunity, to connect with different coaches and kind of keep in contact with coaches that we know we can learn something from.
What have your international players said about Sean Edwards? What have you heard has been the impact of Sean Edwards?
To be honest, I haven't really heard much. He has spent quite a bit of time at the club with our defence coach, Laurent Thierry. And obviously, again, I think it's, first of all, just based on language and the most for him. I think he needed a crash course in terms of what are the most efficient, effective words to use. Same as when I started, so that was probably the majority of the of their discussion. No, I haven't really heard players say anything, but all that I do know is the vibe in the camp is very good. Players are very happy. And it's a pity that that the competition stopped for them.
And where else are you learning? So is there like a little is there a little Facebook group with all the skills coaches from around the world on, or what's the where are you getting your learning from at the moment?
I try and connect with different coaches all across the globe. I think every coach has his set of mentors kind of stuck at the top here that they bounce ideas off and that they speak to and kind of get guidance from. And then around that you have your specialists that you kind of nominate as, ooh, this guy, I know this guy's good in X and this guy's good in Y. And then you try and slot in.
Who are your specialists? Who are the people that you think are doing a good job in this space?
For me, the last couple of years I've been diving into quite a bit of skill acquisition like a lot of us have. And to be fair, I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, but Dr. Edward Cowlin. He's been really, really good to me. Long Skype sessions, dumbing down the information so that my brain can understand. So that I can understand what he's talking about, you know. It's just limitless in terms of what's going on in Skillac, and I've kind of lost touch, to be fair, but he's been a real good guide. And then there's another guy called Ben Pegner. He's in the UK, so he's also been very good to me in terms of Skillac and just general chat, rugby chat. I know that he's spent quite a lot of time traveling the world, spending time with other coaches. So I kind of get the second shorter version of it. I get the summaries, which I think are really cool, because I don't get to travel as much because we don't have time. And then around that, there's, I think, just the coaches that you meet either in the competition now in the top 14. There's a couple of coaches that I met that I've tried to keep in contact with. And then back in South Africa, coaches that I used to coach against 4 years that are still there, or some of the coaches from Super Rugby, Aussie and New Zealand. So just trying to kind of steal with the eyes and the ears where you can.
What would a Toulouse team session look like? I've just been thinking about it. Because once again, I would have heard lots of people who've played over in France a long time before you were there saying, you know, it's 3 hour sessions. There's no S&C. And actually the way you guys play wouldn't look like you train like that. So I'm trying to imagine how you train based upon how you play. And my guess would be it would be pretty games based. Play through principles. So you keep the ball alive a lot and your support around the ball is exciting. I think you try and get the ball to your best players a lot. So you got some decent outside backs. They touch the ball quite a lot.
Yeah, I think I've been brainstorming, trying to put together a little bit of a tactical periodization framework for what we're actually busy with here. And I've kind of come up with this three phase or three words or three sentences of what I think it is. So I think it's maximum speed, maximum skill, maximum creativity. That's what I think the majority of the time looks like. Obviously, we have to cover the main things. We have to cover the set piece. We have to cover strikes and the way we want to play tactically, blah, blah, blah. But for the majority of the time, we do things fast. Not necessarily Anglo-Saxon way where you would literally run to go and get water and run back into a drill or a game. It's not that strict. But I think when we do things, the idea behind it is that we do it fast. So
is there much problem solving? I guess one of the other things I've probably noticed is that you guys are able to play in different ways, probably still evolving that, I would say, but how does tactical look in your sessions?
I think the coaching team works really, we do work really hard behind the scenes trying to kind of find the keys to unlock the opposition that we're going to be playing against. And we really do try and implement that into the training sessions to make it representative of what we're going to see on the weekend. But again, the high-paced competition of top 14, which I know is more of a, it's not a sprint, but it's a
marathon.
It's a marathon. You would be surprised at how little time there actually is in a week to actually install everything you would like to. So, I think for the majority of it, we work a lot of chaos. We work a lot of unstructured. And when we do work on the structured, we really try and keep it to what we feel can make a difference on the weekend. So if it be a special play to put the ball over the top because we've identified space, or changing the way we want to go about our general play because we've spotted a weakness somewhere in the defense. Those are the things we focus on. And we work a lot in smaller sided games, and then actually a lot of 15v15.
And what the Classement Britannique, you'll have learned those two French words pretty quickly, wouldn't you?
I have learned about that. That is very interesting.
So the Classement Britannique is the other league table that basically looks at how well you do at home versus away, because there's obviously a fair amount of and those were the potentially infected Oreos you were eating then. Looks at home versus away. Clearly lots of French teams prefer to win at home. They have to for their fans. And so what have you noticed about that? Is it a thing you notice week in, week out?
I think again, something I got warned about, and I think this year, not because we planned it that way, but we have struggled away from home. And I think there's been a lot of factors for the reasons why we've struggled away from home. But we definitely approach every game like it's a home game. If it's home or away, we try and prepare just as well. So I think sometimes you can't put your finger on the reason why you lose. It just sometimes pans out that way. And I'm a stickler for stats, because I think, I mean, obviously the stat of winning home and away, you can't really change that or manipulate it to prove a point or disprove a point. But yeah, I don't think at the professional level of top 14, it's not a cultural thing anymore for them. I think teams go out and they try and win every weekend for sure.
When you say stats, what stats would you be looking at if you were watching? And I guess my other question is, how do people measure you? How do they attend to the impact of AB Zonder on a team? Are they comfortable going in 2 months' time, this guy's added this to his repertoire and it's making us a more dangerous team? Or are they going, mate, I want to see the impact. What have you done?
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, stats and skills coaching, I think, is a difficult thing, because the first thing that someone will say is, yeah, but you can look at your passing accuracy percentage, which is fair, you can. You can look at the amount of handling errors you make per game, but all those things revolve around the way you play. So for me, I don't care if we make the most handling errors in the competition, as long as we win. And funnily enough, in the last 2-3 years of Super Rugby that I was involved, the Crusaders were nearly top every year in terms of handling errors.
Because they're trying to play the game.
Exactly. So it's very difficult to put a stat to the influence you have. But again, I think you need to pay close attention to the individual process of every player, and keep a close eye on what players are struggling with, keep a record of what they've been working on and see if it improves. And yes, it is a subjective thing because I'm not going to get a percentage of positive and negative sidesteps with a dummy and a handoff. You could do it if you want, but I think it's more a subjective thing, and it's kind of in the coach's eye to see if a player is improving or not.
Who hangs with you most, forwards or the backs?
Sorry?
Who hangs with you most, the forwards or the backs?
I'd say it's kind of 50-50, eh? Yeah. Got a couple of forwards that are like super, super hell-bent on their skills. And I think forwards have realized as well, it's not that, you know, even the front rows. And I'm lucky because, again, at Toulouse, they're bred in a different way. They're bred to play and to pass and little dummies and sidesteps and handoffs, hit and spins, offloads out the back. I mean, you name it, the guys are trying to do it. So it's a very interesting place to be a coach that is focusing on skills.
Yeah.
And it's an exciting place to work because players are just keen to play. So, yeah.
I would want to coach Toulouse. So if you ever leave, I'm always available.
I will drop your CV.
My wife would never move. Mate, it's been awesome. I've got a few one-worders for you just to finish us off.
Okay.
Saracens.
So now I give you one word.
You give me one word, yeah, Saracens.
This is going to sound terrible, but it's a shame.
Yeah,
it's a shame because they were
childhood, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've got such good memories of the club, and I just hope they can come back to where they were, but in the right manner. Let's leave it at that.
Stellenbosch.
Unforgettable.
Sharks.
Playground.
Toulouse.
One in a million.
Rugby.
Life.
Don't tell your wife that. Coaching.
Nah. Passion.
Mate, it's been awesome. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram.
Now you're younger than me. You're obviously you're on Instagram, TikTok, House.
No. I don't know the rest of it. I've actually found, I'm on LinkedIn as well, but I found House Party. That's pretty cool.
And yeah, times like the kids. Well, you're on Twitter as well, aren't you?
I'm on Twitter, but to be honest, I haven't really been active on there for a very long time. But yeah, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook.
Nice. And I can definitely vouch for the fact that you people reach out to you, you'll definitely connect with them and be keen to learn. So
yes, of course, always,
mate. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your day in lockdown.
Cheers, mate. You too.
Spend time with the fam. Be safe.
Good luck with your running your new running career.
Thanks. Cheers, mate. Appreciate
all right.
It.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers, dude.